Welcome back to the Dogs of War podcast. As always, it is great to have you on the program. This episode is brought to you by Baker Mayfield's throwing arm. It is also brought to you by Zabo Apparel Company. You need any more Christmas gifts? You need your Cleveland sports gear for the winter? Check them out. You know exactly where to go. SZABOApparel.com. Today's episode, Raleigh and I discuss our victory over the Tennessee Titans this past weekend and our upcoming bout with the Ravens on Monday Night Football. Our special guest tonight is actually Raleigh's uncle, who's an orthopedic surgeon and has been team doctor for a bunch of teams in both college and professional sports. We asked him to dumb down, if you will, sports injuries, specifically the ones on the Browns right now, and just sports injuries in pro sports in general. It's really interesting to be able to hear from a former team doctor how they work with players and coaches in the media. We really enjoyed it. We think you will too. Let's go. All right, I screwed up the record button this time, so I just hit record, and we're going.
Damn you. So before we get into it, let's make sure we're on the same page. It is December, and we are not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs.
Correct. And hang on, I got my calculator on my phone here. Even if we lose, knocking on wood very hard, every game for the rest of the year, we still finish not 500, not below 500, but above with a winning record. Is that correct?
That's also correct. And not only are we not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, but we actually have a strong chance of making the playoffs like we're supposed to. Correct?
Also correct. Are we really 9-3? Is this a real are we like actually on a podcast talking about a 9-3 Browns team right now? Can we go back to the same week last season and listen to that episode after we're done here? I don't know what to do.
You know what? Let's get into this podcast, Kevin. Welcome back to the Dogs of War podcast, the one when the Cleveland Browns have 9 wins and 3 losses.
We're back. You got Kevin, you got Raleigh, and we're in a big mood to pod right now. I'm almost getting, I don't want to say it because this song, Outstanding, that I always play for our victory episodes is one of my favorite songs, but I mean, I'm kind of getting sick of it. We hear it so much.
Yeah, at this point, though, we got to keep rolling with it. So Kate asked me to shave. I said it's no shave November because of men's thing, cancer? It's
prostate.
Yeah. Okay. Big fan of No Shave November, mostly for my laziness. But now we got ourselves a playoff beard. So this bad boy is not being touched until the dust is settled.
It's just hard to find words right now. Can you believe in the year of our Lord 2020? Of course, you know what? No, I can't. Look, this is absolutely just perfect textbook Browns. The first worldwide pandemic since early 1900s is the first year.
The Spanish flu.
Yeah, the first year that we get back to the playoffs. I mean, we knew this was coming.
The first year that we should be back in the playoffs.
Yes, like, but I
will never underestimate your shit that totally hit the fan, but feels like we're in the driver's seat.
No, 100%. I'm with you on that because we've seen this script written, well, really just once, but actually 1,000 times, which is Brown's past failures in general. But we're not talking about that anymore. You're either in or you're out right now. We are full steam ahead. There's no more debate, no more bullshit. This team is legit, and we were down still several players. Let's jump right into it.
Game ball goes to Baker, right?
100%. But I have a few mini game balls, like carnival, like prize game balls that I also want to give out to.
Yeah. And Baker threw over 300 pass yards, threw 4 touchdowns in the first half. That is a franchise record. It was a statement win. They were up 38-7 at half in Tennessee. Now, before everybody says, yeah, but they barely squeaked by. Well, guess what? They took their pedal off the gas. If they needed to keep going, they could have. But We can't forget who they are.
They took their foot off the gas pedal is what he meant, everyone. Sorry, continue.
You know, whatever I said. But here's the thing. It's my mom's fault, and it's her fault alone. Every time she texts me, like, something congratulatory before a game is over, I'm not kidding. She's, like, 6 for 6 on shit hitting the fan. And that's exactly what happened. She said at halftime, oh, my gosh, I know I'm not supposed to text you, but this is too great. And I was like, okay. That's
exactly what you're not supposed to text.
I know.
And I don't know about you. I'm sure for 99.999%, all real Browns fans were experiencing the same thing. At halftime, everyone was texting, relax. This is no time to get excited yet or super pumped yet. Even going into the fourth. And then, of course, just the way that we've been beaten down so many times prior to this team. So, you know, before a couple years ago, there's no way that we don't lose that game after, even if we're up that big at halftime. I'm, like I said earlier, I'm just speechless. I mean, Baker with that half, think about all the, and I truly believe when these guys, just because of how, you know, much they're bought into Stefanski and there's how together they are as a team, that they really don't care a whole lot about the outside noise and the media and the Stephen A. Smith. We'll get to Stephen A. Smith and his show in a minute here. I got a few things to say on that. But Baker knew people were writing a lot of shit, talking a lot of shit about him the last few, well, all season. A lot of people would look at Carson Wentz and how he's buckled under whatever he's going through. A lot of people would see all that pressure and all that noise and bullshit and just collapse. A lot of people would. But instead, this dude feeds off that stuff. Like, that was some Oklahoma in-your-face, nut-grabbing Baker swag out there on Sunday. That was so fun to watch. And, like, every asshole in the media, his biggest haters and his biggest fans too, the one thing they were all said on Monday, Sunday night, whenever, after the game, was that if that Baker comes to play, that's a Super Bowl Baker right there.
Yeah. Yeah, welcome back, Mr. Mayfield. Not that he ever left.
No.
But it's, you can tell this team is starting to gel. And I don't know if it was before the Titans game or after the Titans game, he said something along the lines of, yeah, I feel like we haven't really played the ball that we have the potential to do so yet.
He said they haven't played their best game yet. Yeah, he said they haven't played their best game yet. He said that the first half, Stefanski said it was probably the most complete half they've played all year, but they still want to achieve so much more. And it's just so much. Okay, so we talked about smaller game. I don't want to say smaller game ball because that's one person I just want to shout out. And let's talk about this real quick. Kareem Hunt on that muffed ball at the other end when they picked it up and ran down, 95 yards or whatever, to almost score a touchdown. Kareem ran maybe, let's just say, as fast as he's ever ran before in his entire life. No other Browns team since we've been alive would have ever cared enough to run that fast and go tackle that guy. Except Joe Thomas.
Except Joe Thomas, for sure.
And maybe a couple others. But, I mean, right? No other Browns team.
Phil Dawson would have done it. Phil Dawson would have done it.
Well, yeah. Like I said, a handful. Like Tim Couch, the ones that have been on the podcast, for sure. But come on. No Browns team. I mean, you know, my uncle said it perfectly. My dad reminded me of this over the weekend. My uncle used to have, or his biggest gripe with the shittiest teams we've had in Cleveland throughout forever is, he always says, there's a big problem when I am more upset after a loss than the players on the team. And think about it. It's true. You know, we've never had a team this close that is this gelled, that love playing for each other this much. And it's finally obvious. Like I've said this before many times in this podcast, it's so refreshing. It's so nice to finally have that.
Yeah, and all credit to, if you had to give a MVP to like a person in the organization, you got to go Stefanski, right?
100%.
Oh, here's a question. Here's a hypothetical. Do you give it to Stefanski or do you give it to the guy that picks Stefanski?
So I thought you were going to go there actually, because you got to kind of, man. Do I want, no, we can't. No, we're not giving credit to Haslam or Jimmy. We are going to give credit to, so I was going to say, normally you go to the top, but we can't go to the top in this case.
Hey, well, it's Deep Podesta.
But, hey, Depot Remember, we all thought, oh, look at this baseball asshole coming in, not knowing anything about football. Why did he pick Carson Wentz? Yeah, that worked out. Clearly.
Wait, what's the logic there? Carson Wentz sucks now.
Correct. And people hated Haslam and DePodesta, all them, for not drafting him. They said, you guys are idiots.
Oh, and yeah, then he went, I see what you're saying.
And then he went and had a damn near MVP season, you know, took his team to the Super Bowl, even though he didn't play, I mean, not the Super Bowl, the playoffs, so that didn't play, got hurt. But someone saw something, and look at him now. So Stefanski is a short answer to that question.
Yeah, let's just say Stefanski.
Done.
We'll hash out the details later. So about the Stephen A. Smith, I don't even read what the assholes say anymore.
We'll keep it short and sweet. Just case in point again, because we were on the Nobody's podcast. That's Annie Wilkinson and Bryce's podcast a few weeks back. We were talking about how Baker and Emily could tweet like a smiley face or a picture of a puppy, and someone will find something stupid or negative to twist it into. Never fails. And so Monday, first take on ESPN, Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, Molly. I do like the show. I do like them. We can talk about that a whole other time. But another case in point, these people get paid a lot of money to come in with these hot takes. That's what they're supposed to do. But the fact that Baker just played the best game of his professional life and the first topic on ESPN the morning after, it just says Baker's wife. And they go in and ask, they're like, Stephen A. Smith, because for those of you who don't know, and I'm going to make this, we're going to keep this short and sweet. Last week on Thursday or Friday, Stephen A. came out and said, I believe in the Browns. I don't believe in Baker. And then on Sunday, that was the video went viral. It's Stephen A. Smith's ESPN. On Sunday after the game, Emily retweeted that, Emily Mayfield, with this didn't age well or something. And it was just like, it was a perfect tweet. Like, what else? There's nothing malicious, nothing negative, nothing crazy. She didn't say F you or anything. Just made a great point. It's best game of his career.
She did not deserve the credits. It's like, yeah, she sends her.
Well, that's
they
my
say
point.
Their thing. She says, yeah.
The next day, ESPN, it's the topic is Baker's wife. First of all, it's Mrs. Mayfield to y'all. Second of all, just again, case in point, no one gets ridiculed or dissected over their tweets in the league more than those two. It's just incredible. That's why I was howling laughing in my living room by myself yesterday watching this, because it never fails.
Well, Kevin, we just got to do our part, get this podcast as large as humanly possible, keep converting people into Browns fanhood, and we'll cyberbully them all to hell.
Fair enough.
Should we get into the interview?
Yes, why don't you, we got to tee it up first. You got to explain it to us.
So for the first time ever, we are introducing you all to the Dogs of War medical doctor. The medical consultant?
Medical doctor.
I like medical them. Doctor. We'll medically consult him on what his title should be.
I'm really excited for this interview because I have some questions that will probably make him rethink his decision to be a doctor because of how dumb these questions are going to be. But take us away to this week's interview.
Let's get over to Dr. T. We now would like to welcome on the Dogs of War podcast for our first ever medical consultant, Dr. Ray Tesner. In his younger days, Dr. T was an All-Ohio linebacker at Warren G. Harding. He continued his football career at Penn State, effectively dividing his future children from his future nieces and nephews, the latter of which are all Ohio State fans. At Penn State, Dr. T was a three-year letter winner at linebacker. He was on the 1974 team that won the Orange Bowl against LSU. He was on one of Joe Paterno's three teams to go undefeated and not get into the national championship. After college, he went to some medical school. I don't know where he went to medical school. Became a leg doctor, more specifically an orthopedic surgeon. He's the founder of Sports Medicine Grant in Columbus, Ohio. Was a team doctor for the 1992 Winter Olympics team. He was the team doctor for 30 years for the OU Bobcats. The team doctor for the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's also the doctor of various other high schools, semi-professional teams. The list goes on and on. But most importantly, he is my mom's brother and a Browns fan. And most importantly, he is our guest on the Dogs of War podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Raymond Tesner, also known as Uncle Buddy. Uncle Buddy, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Raleigh and Kevin. I've been hearing about this podcast. I don't really know what podcasts are. But, here I am Before I ever listen to one, I'm on it.
Up until like 2017, you had a flip phone.
Oh yes, yes I did. First iPhone in 2019. So I've had it for a year. So I'm fully vested in technology now. I can speak the lingo.
So you were the last. You were literally the last one. Hi, Dr. T. Thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate it. So you were the last one in the world to have a flip phone. It has to be 2019. No.
I didn't. I don't exactly take credit for that position, but I was forced to make the move. So, but I got to say, now that I've made it, like the rest of you, I'm hooked.
So my question, after that long resume that was just read of all those accomplishments and all, you know, team doctors and founder and everything else, like, do you acknowledge Raleigh as being your nephew or no?
Well, yes, I have to say that lately the new Raleigh has been able to enable me to claim him as blood.
The new Raleigh.
What did I do different?
Wife, really, the new wife escalated his status significantly.
Shout out, Kate.
Where'd you guys meet?
Basically, we're obviously regular, out of shape guys who have no idea what it's like to play in the NFL.
I am certain you will think or will say are the dumbest questions you've ever been asked in your career, but I think 99.99999% of people listening have the same exact questions.
One of the things Kevin and I were talking about, there's obviously a ton of injuries that anybody can obtain. Some of the more common ones you hear about, the ACL injuries, the MCL injuries, the sprained Achilles. We have no idea what a calf strain is that Denzel Ward's going through, so we're going to get into that. Yep. But there's different degrees of them. How do doctors and teams and players decide how long they should be out, or like what to tell the media, what to tell the coaches? Like, are there any conflicts of interest between coaches, players, staff? Obviously, we've all seen Varsity Blues with they tried to get – what was the one – Billy Bob, they were trying to inject his leg so that they could play in the state game, whatever. We have no idea where to start, and we're clearly not medical professionals. We're podcast guys.
Well, it does vary, you know, when you go from high school to college to professional. You know, when you get to professional rank and there's money involved, you know, now when you're in college, there could be money involved if a guy thinks he has the potential to play in the pros, and you have to take that into consideration. But, you know, when you're a high school kid, you know, they want to kind of play at all costs. And a professional on the other end of the spectrum has got to take into account, you know, his longevity and in protecting his asset, which is his body, you know, so it gets a lot more complicated the higher up you go. You got a lot of more people involved. You got agents, you got money, you know, and you got higher visibility, you know, with the public and so forth. So it's not as much fun being a team doctor at the higher level as it is at the lower level. But it's still it's still basically the same. I mean, a sports medicine doctor takes into account the difference from being just a regular doctor. You have to take into account primarily, obviously, the player and what the right thing to do, but also take into account the team needs and communicating with the coach. And that involves the time of the year. In other words, if you get an injury in the first part of the year and you know you got a good team and you don't really need them to the last part of the year, you got more time to rest. If it's the last game of the season and you're in the state championship, you know, and him being effective is not one and the same. So you could attempt to play, but if you're 80% of how good you normally are, maybe that 80% is not as good as your backup.
How important, I mean, I would imagine it's important, but
is another responsibility of a team doctor, is it protecting them from themselves because they want to get back out there so bad?
Yes, sometimes you got to do that, absolutely. No, this is bad, you can't play on it. But I want to go in, but I want to go, no, you can't play on it. Now, normally when it's that bad, they know and they're not fighting you. But, you know, is this significant or not significant? For example, I mean, I had a high school kid. We were in the playoffs the other day, and I was just talking to his head coach, and he was our star running back, and it's in the semifinals of the state. And in the first quarter, he tweaks his ankle. And I examine the ankle, and I look at it, and, you know, you could tweak your ankle. It could be broken. If your ankle's broken, end of story, goodbye, put you in a cast. Well, it's not broken. It's not terribly swollen. He's got a sprain. It didn't look terribly bad. I said, listen, it's a sprain. I'll allow you to play on it if you want. Let's see how it goes. It doesn't look that bad. And so we taped it up, put the shoe on him, trainer. He ran around a little bit. He said, ah, it hurts, ah, it hurts. And, you know, I can't play on it. And then, you know, I say, we'll run a little bit, we'll cut a little bit. And he wasn't able to go back into the game. We allowed him to go back in, but he didn't feel comfortable going back in. And, you know, it was a big game. And it was a championship game. We end up losing the game. And, you know, would he have been valuable to participate in that game? He'd been very valuable to participate in that game. We may have won if we had him. But he wasn't able to perform on it. We said, listen, we allow you to perform. Go ahead and try. You want to try? He said, I can't go. I can't go. And that's end of story. And then even if they can go sometimes, okay, I want to go. You put him in, and you can tell by looking at him, he's half of his normal self, and he's no value to you. So you take him out in that situation. So the doctor is in most situations say, listen, it's a mild sprain, doesn't look that bad. You want to try to play on it. And some kids are, I don't know, okay. Another kid says, yeah, I want to go back. And if I think it's okay and it's nothing broken and I don't see any great instability, now you don't have an MRI, everybody on that field. You know, you can't take them in and get an MRI. Now, in some places, in the Blue Jackets and most colleges, now you got an X-ray. You can take them in and get an X-ray if you think it's necessary. Okay, it's not broken. Okay, it's nothing terrible. We know that. I mean, many times for the Blue Jackets, we had an X-ray right in there. You take them in, get an X-ray. If they got hit by a puck on the hand or the foot, you didn't know if it was broken or not. You could get a quick X-ray. Okay, it's not broken. Put me back in.
Oh, they're Canadians. They're a different breed.
Hockey's a different breed, yeah.
Canadians are different than the Russians, which are different than the Poles, which are different than the Americans.
You can't say that, 2020. You can't say that.
Well, shut out the Poles. Shut out the Poles.
Yeah, the Canadians are tough, no doubt about it. Yeah, the Canadians are tough, no doubt about it.
Did you ever find yourself, and we'll get into the more Brown-specific questions, but what you just described, there's essentially three different entities, the doctor, the player, the organization. Did you ever find yourself in the middle of that where, like, do teams ever pressure the doctors to make the wink, wink right decision, or do they play ball for the most part, or does it depend on the organization?
I would imagine it depend on the organization, but I've never had an organization or a coach that would ever put the players, the team ahead of the player's safety. Never.
Good.
Never.
Good. Just wanted to make sure because that would have been a crazy, awesome story. Never. But never. I'm glad. Kevin, what you got?
You talked about this a little bit a few minutes ago. My first question is, like you just said there, in high school, you're told to suck it up and get back out there. Is it obviously a huge difference between pro sports and high school? Is it that these injuries in the pros are so much worse, being that if obviously you're getting tackled by 300-pound, you know, some of the best athletes on the planet? Or is it when you get to pros that players are now seen as investments, so even minor injuries are a big, big deal?
It's definitely the investment side of it is definitely taken into consideration. You're talking about, you know, in the pros, millions of dollars and their livelihood. So that's definitely a factor that's not present at the lower levels.
So when you treat someone like Denzel, his sprained calf, I don't know how bad it was. I mean, it was interesting because at the end of that game, he was out there celebrating with teammates and high-fiving guys. So the next day when that came out, it was like, this is bizarre. When did it happen? Is it common to even like say this back and forth with the person you're treating in the pros? Like, this injury, I would have played right through it in college or high school. Like, this is only like, I wouldn't be sitting out if it weren't for being in the pros.
That could be the case without a doubt. Now, I'm with you in regards to what I've seen there. Now, you know, I just saw what you saw, and I didn't think it was that bad of an injury, and I thought he'd be playing. And then when he didn't play the first week, I thought he'd definitely be back the next week. And when he missed the next one, I was a little surprised based on what I saw and what you saw. However, sometimes that next morning, even though you don't think it's that bad that night, that next morning, or later that evening, it's a different animal. So that's one factor. And then I'm sure in his particular case, they got an MRI, and that gives you a little bit of quantification of the damage. And then without a doubt, in an injury like that, you know, the longer is better. How long is long enough to take off on something like that? Well, I don't know, but longer is always better. You know, is 2 weeks enough? Well, is 3 weeks better? Yeah. Is 4 weeks better? Is he going to be further along in 4 weeks than he is at 2 weeks? Yes. So longer is always better. And in a calf strain or a hamstring strain, the one thing about it is if you don't give it enough time and it can become chronic. Guys got chronic hamstring strains, chronic calf strains. And the quicker you rush them back, the more you run the risk of that becoming a chronic problem. The longer you give it, the safer you are.
So that's almost another category of injury. There was permanent damage, but then there's the chronic injury of bringing it back more often.
Yes, and that's even a chronic calf strain, let's say, that's not something that's, you know, going to change your life the rest of your life. That's just a nagging, chronic, frustrating thing that can bug you for the rest of your career. How do you run the risk of that? By rushing back too quick. And when you're in a situation where you have the time, kind of, now this is not exact. Now, you know, if your team is 0-10, I mean, that's easy, right? You're sitting. There's no game, you know. On the other hand, you know, if you're in a playoff hunt, and you know, if it's a Super Bowl situation, let's say, it would probably be treated or could be treated in some cases differently, because the upside outweighs the downside to a certain extent. And if everybody's on board and everybody understands, yeah, we're coming back a little early. You want to try? Yeah, okay. Can you do it? You know. So, but even if you try, sometimes you can't perform. And then that's the end of it. I say, okay, I allow you to go back in, but you go back in and you can't do the job. Well, you're coming out, or you get back in and find out that it hurts more than you thought, or you re-aggravate it again. You know, that's your answer. Now let's talk about Chubb's MCL injury.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a miracle. Wait, was that a miracle?
Right where I wanted to go to.
Yeah, I mean, that's a ligament, whereas Denzel is a muscle. That particular ligament is almost never operated on that when it's isolated. Now in Burrow's case, there's a chance that, you know, he tore his ACL with his MCL, and, you know, but an isolated only MCL injury is generally something that's not surgical. And again, there's degrees of that. And that's generally a 4 to 6 week injury that needs time and rest and rehab. And it'll heal tightly with very minimal long-term consequences. And, you know, coming back to play. And it, again, depends. Sometimes it's just very mild. And again, that particular injury of his, I've had severe ones on that in high school. A week or two after the injury, the state playoff game. And, you know, you can try to play him through it. You take some chances but if everybody's on board, you know, you can push those things if the situation warrants. But in general, as you saw with Chubb, a relatively mild, not a severe MCL injury is a, you know, 2 to 6 week injury, and they should come back at full go. Now, interesting for him, when I'm watching him, I don't see that he has a knee brace on there. I mean, typically, if you're bringing them back after that, they'd have a knee brace at least for the first 2 to 3 weeks. So that tells me that his injury was relatively mild, and it doesn't appear that he has a brace on there.
Maybe he really was made in a lab. Maybe he really is not a human. I'm serious.
He said he was ready to go after 2 weeks, is something I read.
Again, the timing in the middle of the season, you know, they needed, you know, of course, the Browns were not in a situation where they could cruise. But sometimes you're in a situation where you could cruise. Like, you know, like in high school, for example, you're already 8-0. You know you're in the playoffs. There's 2 weeks to go. The two teams you're playing are cake. You know you're going to beat them. And we don't need this guy for these 2 weeks. We can sit him and get him ready for the playoffs. You know, and the kid agrees, the coach agrees, the parents agree. Now, the one thing about high school, you got parents involved.
So psychos.
Not only the coach and the player, but the parents got to sign up. And they got to be involved in the decision, which is another factor, you know. But at the pros, you got the player, the coach, and the agent, and maybe the wife.
Can you explain, again, like we're two-year-olds, these are some, if not the best athletes on the planet. You've seen it happen in basketball, it's going to happen in football, where they do all these crazy athletic moves. They lift 10,000 pounds in the weight room, but they pivot wrong, or they make the weirdest, goofiest step, or they get something, and that ACL is torn.
Blows your mind up.
Just, I don't, like, how does it happen? For someone who knows nothing about medicine, they show the replay, and it's like, wait, I just saw him get decked by a 400-pound lineman the last play. Here, he was jogging up to the line, and then all of a sudden, trip, and there goes his ACL.
Right.
I don't understand it.
Like Odell. That did not look like a severe injury compared
to – And I'll just say, Odell's a top 15 best athlete on the planet. I think we can all agree with that. Browns jersey or not. And that's exactly what when I was asking the question, what I was thinking about is – he did some kind of weird, like, Mortal Kombat move to try and kick the guy, whatever, I think. But, again, he was just, like, kind of jogging back, and there's ACL's gone.
Right. Well, when I saw that injury, as opposed to you saw Burrow's, did you see the replay of Burrow's injury?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. That one you understand when they say ACL. You're like, right. Oh, yeah. His leg's
gone. You know that's bad. And you know, when I saw Odell, I said, I don't think that's a bad injury. I don't think that's bad. When I saw it happen. I saw the replay. I saw the way he acted to a certain extent, and I was shocked when that turned out to be an ACL injury, which I was shocked based on that, but I'm not shocked because I've seen that happen multiple times. I mean, and the thing that gets you is when you see how little it took for that to happen, you say, how the hell doesn't that happen more often? I mean, why doesn't that happen? He's done that a million times, and maybe it was 1 degree or 1 centimeter different, or 1 pound different or whatever. And when you see how easy it happens, then you just wonder how that doesn't happen so much more frequently. That's what blows your mind, right?
That little 100%.
Thing, yeah, that's happened so quickly and so easily, you say, shit, that should happen almost every play. So, you know, I can't explain that. It's just the wrong angle at the wrong vector with the wrong forces and instantaneously, boom, doesn't take much more than that.
When these injuries happen, you'll see Adam Schefter will tweet out or the team will report that our fear is it's an ACL, need an MRI to confirm. How easy is it to just tell by the examination if it's an ACL or MCL? You can look at it and be like, for sure, it's an ACL when we get it in the MRI tomorrow. Is that easy for doctors to see right off the bat like that?
Most of the time, you know, before the MRI, most of the time. You know, before it depends on how much the patient can relax and you can examine them initially. That varies. Their pain level varies from time to time. But I mean, it's all over the board. I mean, I remember one time at OU, we were playing Ohio State and I was watching the play and it was at the end of the half and we were playing them tight. And a kid makes a great play in the end zone to end the half. For us to go into halftime, they were trying to drive in. We were on defense. He makes a great play. We stop him. We're only down 3 points at halftime. He makes this great play. Now, the end of the story is we end up losing by 40, but at that point, we were playing the game. He makes a fabulous play. I see the play. I see it happen. I see him jump up. He runs off the field. I high five him coming off the field. He almost knocks me down. And a couple of minutes later, the trainer says, I need you to look at Larry's knee. He says he heard it on that play. I saw the whole play. I saw him run off. I said, well, that's not a bad injury. That can't be bad. I went over and I examined him, and sure as hell, he was loose. And it shocked me. He tore his ACL just like that, right in front of my eyes. I saw the whole thing. Never would have expected a serious injury, more obviously.
I honestly thought you were going to say that he did it on the high five to you.
Well, no.
Injuries have always been a crapshoot in the NFL. When you hear that this is kind of a macro medical analysis, when you hear that these guys, they can't have their regular training season, it gets cut down, whatever. Did you expect injuries to occur throughout this year at this level? Or what's the thought there medically?
I never thought about that. You know, they have a down to a science, or not a science, but they have a formula to a certain extent. You know, you get in this preseason camp now, and the first, like in college, the first 10 days have to be without pads, and then you have to have so many contact days and so forth. You know, when I was playing, we didn't have those rules, and I don't know that that's made a big difference. But in your effort, you know, the more in shape you are, the more conditioned you are, the safer you should be theoretically. But I wouldn't expect a direct correlation necessarily, because those guys are working out all year long, and I don't think that shortening the preseason would make you any more, with that kind of shortening, would make you any more likely to injury per se. No.
Oh, well, that kind of mentality that you just described of your generation, that's what led us to win World War II.
There you go.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. He's not that old. Mm-hmm. One of the bigger names. There's a couple. There's a ton of injuries, actually, that they're going through. Ronnie Harrison is our safety. He went down against the Jags. It was like play one. Based on the descriptions we read on the internet, doesn't need surgery and could return in 4 to 6 weeks. When you hear shoulder injury, is that the most vague statement ever, that he doesn't need shoulder surgery? Or what are your thoughts there if you hear that?
Well, shoulder injury is vague. I mean, the top, you know, you could, you know, just kind of bruise it. You could, a separated shoulder involves your AC joint. That's not an uncommon injury to have that doesn't need operated on. So you could sprain your AC joint. You could have a partial ligament tear. Now, a ligament tear in the shoulder, that's what we call labrum. So when you read about labrum surgery, those are ligament injuries in the shoulder. He could have stretched the labrum. He could have bruised it. He could have separated his shoulder. You know, so that's non-surgical, you know, significant injury, needs some time, but something that's non-surgical should get better with time. So there are lots of injuries like that.
I feel like the high school coach in the playoffs that's trying to protect his career, saying, when can we get Ronnie back? Because we might make the playoffs this year. Greedy Williams, perpetually hurt. Not really sure what's going on, other than that it's nerve damage in his shoulder. Does nerve damage scream something different to you? Because he hasn't been in all year. We haven't heard much about it, other than he can't play.
Yeah, nerve damage can happen in the shoulder sometimes. It's rare. There's several nerves in the shoulder that can be affected. And that's something that, you know, it's not generally surgical. It's something that needs time and rest, and hopefully that nerve will recuperate and come back to gain your strength. So that's a rare kind of an injury, not very common. When you're talking about nerves in the shoulder, sometimes it's coming from the neck. There's a bunch of nerves that go down the arm that we call the brachial plexus. So sometimes you can have a brachial plexus injury. Sometimes there's a nerve to the deltoid muscle we call the axillary nerve that can be involved. So nerve injuries are not common around a shoulder. They're not surgical generally, and they take time. And if that nerve doesn't come back the way it needs to, sometimes it never gets better. So that's a little unusual, and can be significant in some cases.
So we talked about Joe Burrow's injury, which they said ACL, MCL, they said other tendon tears, I believe was it. When you see, hear something like that, what does that kind of injury do to his, I guess, can he be as good as he was before this injury? Like what kind of, that just sounds like so much in a little part of the body, the knee. Like, what does that do to his future, or anyone for that?
Yeah, that's a, you know, there's knee injuries, then there's knee injuries, then there's knee injuries. And his, as far as I know, now, just so you know, he was, you know, his dad was a coach at OU while I was down there. So I know the dad and I know the kid. The kid was a patient of mine when he was a high school student. Great kid, great family, great everything. And I talked to the dad when this was going on a little bit and offered my help if they would need anything, which they didn't. They got great doctors down there. But sometimes you need to talk to a friend about it. And I don't know the I didn't get the details on, other than what you just said, ACL, PCL, and MCL. I mean, that's, he had a very severe knee injury. That's almost a dislocated knee with multiple injuries to that. So coming back after that is going to be a really big challenge. It's a really big injury. It's not your straightforward run of the mill. You know, you hear about ACLs, but you know, there's degrees after that. And the more other things that you have involved, and I don't know how many he has, but I know it's more than one. So the more that you have, the tougher it is. And they got great doctors down there. They're going to do a great job. And, but it's going to be a real big challenge. And that's definitely that's a year injury. Now, wasn't there a quarterback recently that just came back that was out for 2 years and came back to San Francisco?
Alex Smith.
Yeah. So it could be one. It could be one of those.
Smith had, I think, 27 surgeries. He had the staph infection, which almost killed him. Yeah. He almost wanted to amputate his leg. He shouldn't be alive or walking, nonetheless, starting an NFL game. And yeah. Shout out to him for beating the Steelers last night.
Yeah.
We talked about and that's very helpful because that just amazes me. And that's also why I'm not a surgeon and you are. So ACL is the one you hear all the time. The other one that you hear a lot now is because of, you know, Kevin Durant and some other big athletes, the ruptured Achilles.
Right.
So besides the character in one of Raleigh's favorite movies, Troy, can you once again break it down? What is it when you tear an Achilles? Is that's the ankle, the muscle behind the ankle?
Yes. That's
to the leg, essentially? Like, yeah, is that the dummy down?
That's a tendon. A tendon attaches muscle to bone.
So Kevin.
Tendon.
I know. I said Kevin. Like, Kevin, you idiot. It was a joke, not tendon. Right. We got a hearing issue and a lack of, never mind.
Anatomy issue, yeah.
Well, you know, I was saying that, you know, a lot of these knee injuries we're not fixing, we're managing. Mm-hmm. Achilles, I'd much rather have an Achilles tendon than an ACL tear. Achilles tendons we can repair. Achilles tendons we can heal. And the long-term problems after an Achilles tendon tear is nothing compared to the long-term problems of an ACL tear.
That blows my mind because the way they talk about it on like ESPN, and they talk about an Achilles like it's a death sentence. Like
No.
It's good to know.
Not at all.
So Grant Delpit's going to be okay.
What's that?
Grant Delpit, he was our number two draft pick this year, safety out of LSU. That's where our biggest depth needs are. And he had an Achilles injury, and I was kind of afraid to ask, like, is he ever going to be the same again? But
just the way the media talks about it, and obviously they're not surgeons, they're not doctors. Now they're Raleigh and I, if we haven't caught on to that by now. But the way it's, I mean, I remember there was a whole conversation. It's been a topic on ESPN for 2 years now. It's, man, if Durant can just get back to maybe 80% of his former self because the Achilles, that'll be a miracle. And so you're saying that's not the case at all.
I would much rather have an Achilles than an ACL, I can tell you that. Now, who was that? Wasn't the Lakers guard, didn't he tear his Achilles and come back and play well?
Boogie. Was it Boogie Cousins?
The fellow that died in the airplane crash, didn't he tear his Achilles?
Oh, Kobe.
Yeah. Kobe tear his Achilles?
He did tear his Achilles. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean.
That Lakers fella.
Yeah, that Lakers guy. Yeah. just Kobe.
Kobe Bryant.
No. Achilles, much rather have an Achilles than a ligament injury in the knee. Other than an MCL in the knee. I mean, having Chubb's injury, that's nothing. That's a cure. That's no long-term sequelae. That's nothing to worry about, you know. So that's a ligament injury, but that's not a bad one. Then the ACL is terrible. Then the ACL with Burrows is worse with all the multiple things. And then, but in Achilles in that spectrum, no, Achilles is fixable.
Have you ever, or I shouldn't say have you ever, what injury is a death sentence to a career? I mean, we talk about the ACL, we talk about the Achilles and how, you know, some can get through them, some can't. The ACL has, you know, potentially very brutal, almost definitely brutal consequences down the road. You know,
have outside you, of a spinal, outside of like a spinal injury, you're saying?
Outside of like spinal or a concussion, you know, concussions all the time, like Eric Lindros, the NHL. Have you ever had to recommend someone ends their professional career because of something with bones, ligaments, or I guess what is the worst situation?
Can you talk Kajana Carter?
Well, you know, obviously neck and head, those are serious. We've had when someone gets multiple concussions, I've had occasions where we've DQ'd them. We're saying, no, it's, you know, it's too bad. You can't play anymore. You're taking too many risks. You know, neck injuries, certainly. Although I've never, you know, I was, you know, the only time, and I don't want to jinx myself while I'm still working, but the most severe injury that I ever saw, the only neck injury I've been associated with at all the games I've been, was when that Adam Taliaferro for Penn State, you know the name, you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, yep. He right. Walked a year later, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a great story.
Right? Yeah.
But I was, you know, it used to be I could go down to Penn State. It was against Penn State. Well, it was against Ohio State, Adam Taliaferro. So I was on the Penn State sidelines at the game. It was at Buckeye Stadium. And that injury took place 5 yards in front of me. I was standing right there. It happened right in front of me. And that's the closest I've been in all my years to a serious neck injury. And I hope I never see one when I'm working. But when he went down with that injury and the way he was moving on the ground, I mean, you could tell it was a serious injury from the instant it happened. That's the only one I've ever seen. And it's scary and it's terrible. You know, that's your extreme, injury in regards to football. But are there injuries that happens to knees and shoulders where you've tried your best and it just doesn't come back and their career is over? Yes. You know, and Burrows would be in that category with the multiple ligament injury, no doubt about it. In regards to shoulders, you know, they're not that bad. The thing that happens in the shoulder, if it's not nerve coming out of the neck, because nerve injuries, which is the spinal injury, I mean, those are, you know, oftentimes not fixable. But outside of nerve injuries, you know, a shoulder that continues to come out of socket, even after it's been operated on several times, and you got to say, listen, you got to call it a career. Or a bad knee that, you know, continues to, you know, Burrow's knee or somebody like Burrow's that gets that operation and is out a year or two and comes back and it continues to swell and it continues to dysfunction, you know, try your best and sometimes it just doesn't work. But, you know, on the other hand, you got like a Brady. You know, Brady injured his ACL, 10 years ago now, and he's been playing and still playing, and you can't even tell he had it happen. So, I mean, he's doing great. But as I mentioned to you, with that, you know, when he's 60, the chance of him needing a knee replacement is much higher than the average guy.
Well, I've certainly learned a lot tonight.
Very educational. Thank you for your time.
Okay, great. And
predictions. We got to do predictions.
Predictions. All right. Well, I'm excited. I think here's my prediction. I think the Browns are going to win the division.
Spicy hot. Can we do predictions for the Monday night football game?
Yep. All right. So give us your score prediction for the upcoming Browns Ravens, who hopefully when you're hearing this, we found out that the Ravens lost tonight, but doesn't look like it as they're up 24-10 against the Cowboys. Score predictions. Uncle Buddy, lead us off.
I think the Browns are peaking at the right time, and I see us winning 35-21.
I would agree. The Ravens are in a bit of a free fall right now. Knock on wood. I'm going to go Browns 31-17.
I'm going Browns 53, Ravens 17. Every time I've done that, we've won. It's more of a superstitious.
You mean every time you make an outrageous prediction, you think we win?
I'm not saying I think that's what happens. I'm saying I know that's what happens, and that's how it's been happening. Whenever I try to predict legit, we lose. Whenever I go hard, we're undefeated.
Well, you know, I don't think anybody would want to play the Browns right now the way they're playing.
No chance.
And I do, I kind of appreciate the both the Steelers and the Ravens loss at this point. They got their asses kicked and they remember it.
We got some payback coming up, and I think we're peaking at the right time. I never saw Baker any better than what he was last week. And I like the way our defense is coming around.
You don't know this until you listen, but you're now the resident Dogs of War physician. So reoccurring, you're a reoccurring guest already.
Doctor of War.
Medical consultant.
Yeah. Is that that's what I was trying to say.
No. If I'm a surgeon, you're calling me a surgeon, not a medical consultant. I want to fling that word around as much as I can.
But thank you again, Dr. T, for coming on. It is greatly appreciated, helping us to understand some things that we hear about every day with regards to injuries, but don't understand at all. That does it for Riley and I. We'll see you next week after the Monday night game. The Friday Five will be coming out on Monday because of the schedule. Good night, Cleveland.
Keep that.